I'm based at the International Centre working with Isabel, Julie, colleagues, Jenny and Lucy, and have led on thinking about how we involve children and people in the work that we do, in the research that we do, trying to promote participation and embed it within our research. I'll say very imperfectly. It's a kind of, it's a journey, a kind of learning, but it's a commitment that we have.
So we've been asked to kind of set the scene for today in terms of what, where we're coming from and setting the day up and some of the ideas that informed our thinking about today. So it's not kind of definitive, it's more raising some issues which I think we'll be exploring further in different ways throughout the day. But we thought it was helpful for you to have a little bit of our background and history.
Bit dark there.
First of all, we wanted to raise the question of language, and although you can't see it very well, this is a slide of the artist Bruegel, picture of the Tower of Babel. One of the issues that really struck me as someone very much, if you like, coming into the field of doing research and talking to practitioners and young people about participation, is that the question of language comes up again and again and again. In the context of the work I've been doing on the participation strand, which has included reviewing the literature in this area, this question of language just recurs. So we find an endless number of terms being used which may broadly mean the same thing but don't always mean the same thing. So we have words like consultation, empowerment, co-production, co-creation, user involvement, service user involvement, participatory practice. All these terms are used variously. And one bit of me, when I've been thinking about this and working on this, has thought, well, maybe it doesn't really matter if we're all meaning the same thing. But in terms of my conversations with people working on the ground and with young people, language does matter in terms of the way we understand what we're doing. And in terms of the way this is communicated to those who have authority within services, or in terms of the distribution of resources and services. So I could go on at length on this, but it's more a question of raising this, that we will use different terms, different language, and it's part of the discussion about what participation in relation to CSE services is about. And this was very much a theme of the scoping review that was the starting point for the participation strand in the Alexei project. And this was aiming to try and find out, well, we think participation is important, what do we actually know in this area? And this was really interesting because we did try to look at participation more broadly, but critical to this is that participation and the idea of young people's involvement, the centrality of how we work directly with young people and listen to young people, has been a consistent theme in the literature about child sexual exploitation and abuse. It has always been there as an issue that is central to making services accessible and workable for young people. That's not to say it's always been successful, and that, or indeed that young people's experience has in any way been consistent. The other thing, the key thing that I would want to pull from this is that we have a little bit of evidence about young people's experience of CSE services. Most of the samples and the number of young people talked to is actually pretty small. We know most about young people who are actually in touch with specialist CSE services. We know very little about young people who've experienced CSE and haven't actually got through the door of a service or haven't actually stayed in a service. There's very little evidence about that and about their experience, good and bad in terms of their engagement or how far they've been listened to. And inevitably, I'm afraid that's also true of specific groups in receipt of CIC services. So young people from who are disabled, young people from particular cultural or ethnic backgrounds. And so we have very variable evidence. So days like today become really important in terms of pulling together experiences from other areas of work and from those receiving services or practitioners working on the ground.
Okay. I'm just going to continue on from what Isabel's been saying and just a little bit more kind of scene setting. And so there's just a few things I want to say. One is part of the reason for today, and it's this idea of kind of pulling threads together. And I think that works in two ways. One, as people have mentioned, we're an applied research centre, so we're really committed to that the research that we do makes a difference in practice and policy, and that doesn't happen without conversations like today, and trying to create dialogue between people coming from diverse perspectives, maybe with similar commitments. So in that sense, today is a bit of a kind of pulling threads together. But I think also, for me, it's something about the rationale of why this agenda feels really important. And actually, it's really lovely to have Gerrison Lansdowne here today, who's talked a lot about the links between children's rights to protection and children's rights to participation, and needing to make that connection and to understand that connection and make that argument clearer. And for me, that's a really, really important point, because I think children's participation in this field has too often been seen as an add-on and a luxury. And first, we need to keep children physically safe, and then we might think about letting them have and involvement decision making, and I see that in so many different ways play out. And until we kind of bring those threads together and say, no, actually, part of keeping children safe, both on an individual level and collectively at society, involves listening to children, involving them in decision making, and really kind of explain that and make that case for that, I think we've still got a long way to go. So that feels like an important kind of important part of the rationale for today, but also important job for us to do. And then I'm just going to say two more things. One is kind of, I guess, a bit of optimism, and the second, a bit of realism. So that is the optimistic bit, the kind of the open door, the idea that actually, in terms of going forward, it's good to look back and recognise that change has happened, and I think quite significant change to some degree. My history of working in this area doesn't go back half as far as some others here. And absolutely acknowledge that lots of this work was going on a long time before I got involved. But certainly in the kind of 9 years I've worked in this field, it feels like is a really different climate. And if I think back to when I started work in 2008, things that really characterised that were, at the time there was new guidance being written. It's called the DCSF 2009 guidance. That guidance, there was no input from children and young people in the development of that guidance. That guidance says in it, oh, we should involve children and people in decision making, but it's really weak, and says, but be careful, and actually not all children, you know, not all children really should be involved. It might not be right for some children. So it's very kind of weak on that. I think at the same time, absolutely it's important to say there was lots of individuals really pushing this agenda, but they tended to be isolated as individuals. And it wasn't, there were very few examples of organisational cultures that embraced participation. So places where there was a whole organisation who'd really built this into everything they do. Evidence from research, we did some research, colleagues Sue Jago and Jenny Pierce in 2009, looking at what local children's safeguarding boards were doing at that time. And there was very little evidence of any interest or commitment to children's participation in their services, or even thinking that that was kind of part of their job. And then if you look now where we are, I think there is a change, and it's important to acknowledge that. Can see how in inspection frameworks around child sexual exploitation, there's increasingly a commitment to look for evidence of children's decision making. There's evidence and there's examples, people here today that we'll hear from, of trying to embed these principles into statutory services. We know kind of interest from people like the police, who we might have never thought would think it was part of their role to embed participation in their work with children and young people. And I noticed in health there's a new nursing tool coming out soon, which again has worked really hard to develop
and integrate these things. And I think just even a day, just even thinking, looking at who's in the room and your interest, the fact that we don't have any empty chairs, again, suggests that commitment. So I think it's really important to say, I think we are a different place, and I think that's really helpful and motivating to think that no change can and does happen, but doesn't mean we don't need to keep pushing and we don't need to keep reflecting and thinking about how do we kind of make that change happen faster, a more significant and more radical change. And I suppose this is a bit of realism, and this is a mixed landscape, a kind of bumpy ground, kind of highlighting that there's still hills to climb and bumps to navigate. And I think for me, it's remembering that yes, there is, you know, it's more integrated in people's language, there's more of a widespread commitment to embedding children's participation, children's involvement, decision making in sexual violence services and broader child protection services. But actually, the research that we have done, and as Isabel pointed out, it's small scale, small samples, but there is quite a significant number of those pieces of research. And when we talk to children and young people about their experiences of the police and about their experiences of social care and health, and sometimes third sector services as well, they continue to tell us that all too often, not without exceptions, but all too often, they feel like they are marginalised, not listened to. Memorable quotes I can think of as a young person going through criminal justice saying, I feel like a puppet. I'm there when they come when they want me and then disappear without. I'm not informed about anything. Conversations happen above my head. In social care, young people talking about being passed around services. Again, people talking above their head, not being invited to meetings. That for me is a really significant thing. The rights children have, if you're a looked after child, a young person, don't apply in the same way. If you're not looked after and you're involved in statutory social care for sexual exploitation, it's very rare that you'll be invited to multi-agency meetings and involved in those decision making. So I think there's still a long way to go, and there's still lots of change to happen. So I guess it's, trying to kind of keep ourselves motivated by knowing that we can create change, but also recognise that there's still a long way to go. And so hopefully today we'll produce some kind of interesting discussions. And it feels really brilliant to be here with such a kind of interesting and diverse audience and so many new faces and old faces as well. So I'm really, really grateful to be here myself, having dialogue with you all.